This is Game Time AM. Now, back to Brad Lee and Jeff Jones from St. Louis Game Time on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Make up your mind. Welcome back to Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan, KFNS, 105.7 HD2, streaming live on InsideSTL.com. I'm Jeff Jones. That's Matt Davis across the board. It's a song I recognize, but I'm worse at guessing the bands than anybody else is. There's no... I don't know.
This is a 90s something,
I think. Know it's a 90s something. I'm cheating now. I don't know.
The song is called Possum Kingdom.
Okay.
By the Toadies.
The Toadies. Yeah, I would never have gotten there. Never, ever.
I only know two songs by them.
Well... I've heard that song, but I would not have been able to find the artist. So yeah, this is Toadies talk, I guess, this morning on Game Time AM. No, we got lots of NHL stuff to break down. It's about to be roster palooza time in the NHL.
It's about time.
You've been hearing all of this stuff for weeks and months now. All these deals are going to be coming in the run up to the expansion draft, and all these teams have deals worked out with Vegas. And over the weekend, there was all this smoke around the Blackhawks. A core player is about to get traded.
What smoke was there? I missed that.
There was actually one of the guys that covers the Blackhawks in Chicago. It is Jay. It's Jay, and his last name starts with a Z, and it's very Polish.
Jay-Z?
It was Jay-Z. It was Hove. Jay Zawalewski, I believe, is the gentleman's name who writes for 670 in Chicago. As I look him up on Twitter right now to stall because I feel like I should know.
Now, what is his role with Chicago?
He's a writer, radio guy up in Chicago. Had tweeted over the weekend that basically that he had been told, it's coming, smoke's coming down the pike, because the Blackhawks are in their traditional cap crunch. It's been fairly well established, I think, for a while now that one way or another, Marcus Kruger is ending up in Las Vegas.
That's all but a given,
pretty well acknowledged by both. So that's been largely acknowledged, and Mark Lazarus over the weekend, the writer for the Sun-Times, I always get this backward. I always forget if Lazarus covers him for the Sun-Times or for the Trib, and I should know that.
It's one or
Sun-Times.
The other.
He is indeed the Sun-Times writer. Tweeted over the weekend, about the inevitability of Marcus Kruger ending up in Las Vegas. It appears that Kruger will be drafted in the expansion draft, and as part of that, the Blackhawks will be trading Trevor Van Riemsdyk as well to Vegas. So that appears to be the situation there. That being said, that still doesn't necessarily clear all the room that the Blackhawks need to re-sign people and reorient themselves, but they have a lot of no-movement clauses that are associated with their players. Over the weekend, all of the speculation was around being told, quote-unquote, that core players for the Blackhawks are maybe on the way out. It appears that that guy is probably Nicklas Jarmolson, just because he is the only one of their core, quote-unquote, core guys that doesn't have a full no-move. Lazarus also was speculating about Marian Hossa. Now, part of that speculation may have come from who he was and wasn't able to get a hold of, because he was able to tweet over the weekend and confirm that neither Brent Seabrook nor Artem Anisimov had been asked to waive their no-move deals. My guess would be he knows that because he was able to get in contact with those guys, and perhaps he was not able to get in contact with Hossa. That would be that was my supposition, reading between the lines of his tweets, at least. So,
interesting.
Because Seabrook was a name who you heard batted around a little bit when all of this conversation started up, because he is a somewhat declining asset with a large contract.
Right. Does he still have like 8 years left? I think
he's got a pretty long stretch. Left on that team.
How could they even plan on moving that guy?
Well, you trade him to Florida. What the Blackhawks do with all of their bad contracts? I mean, right now,
Florida's in a weird place right now, though, where they're actually in the middle of trying to be competitive.
That's true. I mean, but so Seabrook can help with that. So I'm looking at the matrix here on Cap Friendly. They're showing 7 more years on Seabrook's deal. Now, granted, if he goes out past 23-24, it wouldn't show it, but it does show 7 more years. It shows, right now, by the way, the Chicago Blackhawks have $4.5 million in cap overage without having... granted, that's with 13 forwards and 7 defensemen and 2 goaltenders already signed.
Oh, wow.
So that is a full team, but they are $4.5 million over the cap. And part of that is going to come... it comes from... bonus carryovers. But when you have guys who reach bonus incentives in their contract in a given year, you can toll those against the next year's cap if they would put you over. But the Blackhawks have a bunch of those, mostly thanks to Artemi Panarin. And Panarin, by the way, whose contract jumps from less than $1 million to $6 million in this coming season, big part of that. Six more years at $10.5 million apiece for both Kane and Taves. So really hard for the Blackhawks to create a lot of room when $20 million of cap hit is tied up in two players.
What are they doing differently than the Pittsburgh Penguins? Because,
well, not a lot. There are basically two big differences in the cap situations for the Blackhawks and the Penguins.
Okay.
Well, so actually we'll say three. Number one is the bonus situation, whereas the Penguins have some younger guys who are on those entry level deals who are producing for them.
Right.
They're not producing at Panarin levels, and so they're not creating the sort of bonus problems that sort of roll over from cap year to cap year. So that's one. Number two, the Penguins don't have the same number of high-priced defensemen that the Blackhawks do. The Blackhawks have Jalmerson and Keith and Seabrook all over $4 million, whereas the Penguins are basically just dealing with Letang and Mata. So it's a smaller effect overall. And the third thing is the numbers at the top end for Pittsburgh are smaller. So Sidney Crosby's cap hit is $8.7 million a season. Evgeny Malkin's is 9.5. The Blackhawks have two guys at 10.5. So, you know, that's $3 million in savings for the top two guys for Pittsburgh compared to the top two guys for Chicago.
Right.
And so that $3 million, look, the Blackhawks are 4.5 over. $3 million of that is the difference in Kane and Taves. And by the way, you're paying Jonathan Taves $10.5 million to put up 45 points.
He makes $10.5 million.
$10.5 million. That's crazy. Patrick Kane signed identical contracts, I believe, after the 2015 Stanley Cup win.
And I'm going to sound crazy for saying this, but that's fine. I've always thought that Jonathan Taves has been, you know, pumped up a lot more than he necessarily deserves. I mean,
yes,
they've had good teams and they've won the cup, but Jonathan Taves himself, especially making $10.5 million, you know, you're right. He's never been more than a 50, 60-point player.
He had a couple of years where he was closer to like 70, 75 at his peak. But, I mean, yes, you are correct that Jonathan Taves is not strictly a $10.5 million guy. You're paying, at that point, for intangibles and leadership, and you're paying for what Jonathan Taves. You're paying for the past with a guy like Taves,
paying
right?
for the cups.
Exactly. That is the tax that the Blackhawks are paying at this point for having won three Stanley Cups. And frankly, if the Blues wanted to win three cups and then pay Paul Stastny $10.5 million a year, I would not be that mad about it. I could, you know, Matt's making a face at me right now. Look, I'd swallow 6 years of $10.5 million for Paul Stastny if it came with three freaking Stanley Cups. That would to me be more than, obviously one does not necessitate the other. I'm just saying, if the genie came down and said to me, you can have three cups, but you have to pay Yuri Laterra $12 million a year for the next 10 years, I'm taking it. I don't care. Give me the cup.
Okay.
I'd do it for one.
Just one cup?
I don't care, man.
Just one? Can we maybe
honestly, at this,
negotiate a second cup?
At this point, I might do it for one win in the cup final.
Oh, no.
Like, not if the deal was you will lose the series 4-1, but if the deal was I guarantee you we'll get to the cup final and win at least one game.
So the outcome of the series is a toss-up, but we guarantee you could still win one game.
Yes. I would take it. I would dump $120 million in the Yuri Laterra over the next 10 years. I don't care. Give me there.
I have to have a guaranteed cup win.
Just give me there,
win.
Baby. No, there's no way.
Has to be a guaranteed cup win.
If you can be guaranteed to be in the final and win a game, that's about as good as, you know, well, that's obviously much better than it's ever actually gonna get. But I'm just saying,
than they've ever done.
That would be literally the best thing in the history of the St. Louis Blues. It's hard to say.
Wow.
It is hard to say no to that. Sure.
It is, but I'll stay no. I'll hold out for a cup.
But in any event,
you know, it's a fun thing to try that? To decide for me. Are the Blues going to have a chance to win a cup with the situation as it is, or are the Blues going to end up hitting a road where it's time for rebuild / fire people, bring in new people, start all over again? Which one do you think is going to happen first?
Well, it depends on who you ask, because some people will tell you that they're in the middle of the ladder right now.
Is that you?
I don't think that we're going to see a true like 2005-esque burn it down, garage sale it off kind of rebuild for a couple of reasons. Number one, because I don't think that's financially viable. Like it or not, this is a business, and the business has to at least be float.
Let me define it a little bit better.
Yeah,
and forget the roster.
Okay,
we're talking about a coaching, leadership, front office rebuild.
That I mean, so front office. I guess we'll see what happens with Doug Armstrong, but they fired the coach in the middle of last season. They got a new captain. That is turning over right now. We're in the midst of that right now. So that's happening. Again, you know,
On a bigger scale because
what's a bigger scale than firing a guy who was a coach for 5 years and you get a new captain after 5 years?
Underperforming for the next 2 or 3 years to where we need another coach come in, new GM, new
So you're
whatever.
saying new scout, you're saying fully clean you're saying fully clean house. I'm no more about, no Armstrong.
I'm talking about this group is not working, it's not getting it done. We need to bring in new stuff, bring in new people. And see where they can take it.
I don't think that you are probably going to see that for, I don't know. I have a hard time at this point imagining a situation that includes Doug Armstrong losing his job.
Yeah.
Now, he does have a contract that is up after this coming season. He has not yet signed an extension. When we met with Tom Stillman and interviewed him, was very supportive. Did not want to talk about contracts. Said that we don't talk about ongoing negotiations. Yada yada, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But mentioned Armstrong looking 6 to 8 years down the road. That was the phrase he used.
Oh.
So if that's the case, and if that's the organizational view,
do we win a cup in that time frame? Then,
if you held a gun to my head, I would say no.
Right.
That the Blues do not win a cup in the next 6 to 8
years. You don't
have
to hold
the
gun to my head for me to say no, if that's the situation. They don't win a cup.
When I say that, what I mean is that I don't really feel confident in the ability to project out that far. Because if you really, when you think about how much changes, rewind the clock 8 years mm-hmm. back from now.
No.
The Blues the Blues made the playoffs. They got swept in the first round by Vancouver 8
yes.
years ago. Who was the starting goaltender for those St. Louis Blues, Matt Davis?
I don't even remember.
Chris Mason.
Okay, yeah,
But that's how far back we are. That's how many, that was before Vladimir.
We're a completely different team than we were.
Before Vladimir Tarasenko was even a twinkle in our eye, because the 2009 draft was the year that we drafted David Rundblad in the first round.
Oh, wow.
And then traded him the next year for the pick, which was used to pick Tarasenko.
Wasn't
so
even
that's,
a twinkle.
That's how far back you have to go 8 years back. And so if you tell me to look 8 years into the future, I don't know. I don't know what the building looks like in 8 years.
Right.
I don't know how much money the team is making. Maybe a brand. I don't know what a TV contract looks like in 8 years. I don't have any idea. There are so many. I don't know who owns the team in 8 years.
You just keep it basic.
There are
keep
so
it
many,
basic and just.
There's so many parts. What I'm saying. There's so many parts of the business operation that do affect the on-ice product. Mm-hmm. And frankly, look, that's the case for every team, even the Pittsburghs and Chicagos of the world. The business side of the game affects the hockey side of the game. Pittsburgh stabilized when they got a new building and new ownership and were able to generate excitement.
Right.
You saw stabilization with the Blackhawks, and frankly, you saw it after Bill Wirtz died, and the Suns took over, Rocky took over, and they hired Scotty and Stan Bowman, and they brought Quenneville in. When you had all of those huge organizational changes, and so
right.
It's really hard to see. Now, granted, the Blackhawks have changes, and then the Blackhawks have success. Maybe that is a warrant for the Blues need bigger changes.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you change out Armstrong.
Basically,
whatever.
I think what I'm trying to get at is Armstrong has had 6 years. I'll say 6 years.
Okay.
And in a lot of ways, you could say we're regressing this past season. We regressed this past season.
I will say this. I don't think that Doug Armstrong will be the GM in 6 years.
Okay.
I don't know that he will be out of the organization in 6 years, but I don't think he will be the general manager.
Mm-hmm.
I think that sometime in the next, within the next 2 or 3 years, maybe you'll see a transition to a McInnes or a Broder or that type of guy, and you'll see Armstrong kind of move up and follow
right.
follow the Larry Pleau path, where he becomes a senior vice president of X, Y, and Z, and then you see younger guys
sort of
take over.
Texting in. He said, I can see 8 years into the future, and Tage Thompson is a stud.
Well, that's helpful.
That is the greatest news
that
I've heard today.
Yeah, that would be a pretty big pick-me-up if it turns out that another guy who they get late in the first
round. Yeah, because we need him to be studly.
We need somebody to be something. The Blues need... you know, they need to find something. Something mm-hmm. exciting and big needs to happen. So I was thinking about this. The last time the Blues had a player acquisition that really, like, turned heads and worked out, Tarasenko, right? I mean, the draft of Tarasenko in 2010, the Blues make that unexpected move to get back into the first round, grab Tarasenko.
Yeah.
That was the last time that
before
the team,
that was Alex Steen, perhaps?
Maybe, but even that at the time was not, that was not super well received because Lee Stempniak was wildly popular. Right. I mean, that's true. Like, you laugh now, but I mean,
it took
true.
A couple seasons for Steen to get up there and it did. You know, he was in the Blues fans' hearts.
Definitely still developing, and I think was maybe held back a little bit by his experiences in Toronto.
And really, the whole issue with him in Toronto, I believe, was injuries and not being able to stay in the lineup.
Right.
And he was able to overcome that to an extent coming here to St. Louis, but...
Yeah. By the way, text from Richard Pritchard says, 8 years into the future and the Blues are in Kansas City. And he also said, owned by Stan Kroenke.
You take that back.
Stan Kroenke already owns a hockey team. He don't want another one. He can barely run the one that he has.
That would
you
be horrible.
It's funny. I mean, not funny, but that's part of the problem. Now, not 8 years into the future, but it's been made clear by Chris Immerman on this program as well as many other places that the Blues expect these renovations to Scott Trade to last what they're calling the life of the building, which they're saying is 20 more years.
Okay.
That these renovations will drag the building through 20 more years, and then it's going to be new arena time for the Blues. And I don't know. Again, I don't know what that looks like because I don't know what city politics look like 20 years down the road. I don't know what national politics look like 20 years down the road. I don't know if we have an economy 20 years down the road. Maybe we're all playing with fire and stones and I have no idea, but around my 50th birthday, the St. Louis Blues are going to be looking for a new arena to play in as long as they still exist and the world hasn't exploded by then. So it does pose a long-term stability question. Now, I will say, part of the reason that I had hesitations about the Hunt family being involved with an AHL team with the Blues was for that exact reason, that once their money starts being part of the organization and that influence starts happening, then all of a sudden, maybe that becomes a possibility. 20 years from now, the Sprint Center is going to be a 40-year-old building that's never had a permanent tenant. So that's not going to be a viable solution either. So at least in 20 years, we can at least say that Kansas City is not going to have that big advantage over the Blues. Or over St. Louis, I should say. But... yeah, look, the long-term stability of the franchise is a thing that we probably have to consider.
Well, it brings up a question. How long can our ownership group with Tom Stillman continue to do things the way they are as far as spending to the cap and putting all the money into the team and whatnot? How long can he continue to do that without actually making deep playoff pushes every single year and bringing in a cup or two?
And again, how long can Tom Stillman hold together the ownership group as it exists?
Right.
Because he's the controlling partner, but he's not a majority. I don't believe at least he's the majority partner. The team is owned by a collection.
Is he not majority?
He might be the majority owner. That's if he is, it's not by more than a few percent. I mean, he doesn't own 80% of the team, right? There's a pretty wide distribution of shares of the team spread among business owners in the community. And I actually wanted just now to go look to see how old Tom Stillman was, and I can't find it listed anywhere, but if he graduated from college in 1974, so if we're doing math backwards, it probably means he was born roughly in 1952, which would make him 65-ish, right? That sounds
66.
Yeah, so that's, I mean... he's not young.
66 right now? Wow.
Yeah, and he's in great shape for 66.
I would say, yeah.
Right. Yeah, you know, you'd never be able to guess that from meeting him and being around him, but
ooh.
There's a conversation about the long-term future of the team that needs to take into consideration the need to infuse continually younger blood into that management structure. And that's part of the issue. Text from the 314 says, in 20 years, St. Louis will still be run by liberals and crime-ridden. That describes it now, kind of. I mean, right? Like, you know, setting aside the value judgments, I mean, Right. It's a Democratic mayor. It's been a Democratic mayor for 20 years, and there's a lot of crime. I don't know.
Right.
Okay. That's nifty. Hall of Famer Dave texting in to say, very good discussion. Thanks, Dave. Says, which current blue is still here in 8 years? Fabry, maybe. Who else? No way to predict the next 6 to 8 years. So again, we rewind 8 years to 2009. Ryan Reeves was here. Alexander Steen was here. Alex Pietrangelo was in the organization, kind of around
sort
junior
of here.
Around the team. Yeah, sort of here. Other than those three, Jake Allen was drafted in 2008, so he would have been in the organization.
Okay.
Other than that, Patrick Berglund. Patrick Berglund was here. Yep. David Perron was here.
So was Perron.
David Perron was here and then left. But you can't count Perron. He left, so he gets wiped out.
Doesn't count.
So, but you know, okay. So we're talking about five guys that are still here in 8 years. Pietrangelo probably is still here in 8 years. If you said bet on either Alex Pietrangelo or Robbie Fabry being here in 8 years, I would actually bet on Pietrangelo just because that's a more established figure who is, you know, who has more prominence.
It's easier to predict Pietrangelo's next 8 years, I think, than it would be for Fabry.
Yes, his career arc, I think, is fairly well established at this point. I think it is probably, I would say likely, that Colton Parayko is still here in 8 years.
Good chance.
Oh,
it really depends. What about Tarasenko? Is he still here in 8 years?
That's a harder.
I'm gonna put my money on
a harder
no.
conversation. Yeah,
especially if we don't win. If the Blues don't win,
he doesn't. I don't believe has 8 more years left on his deal. I think
his
deal was eight years in the first place. Yeah, so I think he has like 6 years left on the contract, right? Yeah, he's a free agent following the 22-23 season. He does have exactly 6 years left.
If there was a way for me to put money on it, I would put money that Tarasenko's gone in 6 years.
I mean,
the end of his contract. If we're not winning and putting out a fantastic team each and every season, I think Tarasenko's
gone. So much changes. Like, there's just so much down the road. Yeah, I mean, it's really
pure fantasy.
It's really hard. It's really, really, really hard to know. Yeah,
that's the only thing I think I would feel comfortable saying, honestly.
That Tarasenko's gone in 8 years.
Tarasenko's gone in 8 years. Tarasenko will not be here. And to make it more exact, whenever his contract is up in 6 years, whatever it is, then he will be gone.
I mean, he's only 31 at the expiry of his contract, so it's not like he's going to be.
He should still be good,
right? He's
but
not
at the
yet.
Same
he's
time. That could also be prime time for him to jump on back to the KHL.
If you told me that I had to bet on whether or not the KHL existed in 6 years, I would bet no. I mean, like that's okay. That's not a sustainable model when half the teams don't have any money and they need to contract and the FSB busts into the team's financial offices and is conducting
random
raids.
They can rig something together.
I mean, there will be some form of hockey in
Russia.
There
will be a couple teams at least.
I don't know. The KHL is probably solvent for 6 more years. But yeah, for sure. There's definitely something going on there. But so
that was more me just pointing out how these Russian guys,
right?
Some of them tend to like to go back home to Russia around the age of 30 or so.
So okay, so we settled on what, five guys, right? Roughly that were here, that were in the organization 8 years ago that are still in the conversation.
I'm sure we could dig up one more if we wanted to really look hard.
Well, but so I mean, if we're talking about five guys, the five I would say probably Pietrangelo, Parayko. Let's go Fabry. I'll say Tage Thompson will be here in 8 years.
I'll say Jake Allen.
That I would be less confident in. Jake Allen in 8 years will be 34.
Okay.
He'll need a new contract 4 years out from now. I don't
34.
Know. That's kind of where you reach an expiration for a goalie.
That's a maybe. I mean, that could be second contract. That could be nearing the end of a second contract with the Blues.
I'll tell you who's going to be here in 8 years.
Who's that?
Patrick Berglund. he'll only be 37. And because he always plays in that 45-mile-an-hour zone, Patrick Berglund is just gonna rack up 2,000 games.
You
for the
just
Blues.
About made me choke to death right there.
Matt fell over laughing out of his chair, hacking onto the floor, thinking about.
But you're probably right. That's the one thing we can bank
37-year-old Patrick Berglund will still be here.
Player coach Patrick Berglund
just cruising around the ice, putting in 18 to 22 goals.
Can you imagine how slow he would be at that point?
He'll be the exact same player he is now. He'll be the exact
same
player.
He'll be slower.
No, because he.
So you don't think he could get any slower?
No, he's in cruise control. He only has one speed. There's no faster and there's no slower with Patrick Berglund.
Oh.
You get that 45 in the left lane
from
Patrick Berglund all the time.
I would not ever pay for tickets to go to the game where Patrick Berglund's jersey is lifted to the rafters as the most
it's games coming.
Played for the St. Louis Blues. Won't pay to go to that
a
game.
A big 21 inside a blue heart to replace the number 5 that used to be there for Bobby
That really
player.
Just kind of sums up the Blues organization over the last 50 years too, doesn't it?
There's gonna be 9 guys all named Aiden and Caden and Hayden playing for the Blues in 8 years who are gonna come out and stand on the blue line and give their honors to Patrick Berglund as his lovely Swedish number is raised to the rafters. You're listening to Game Time AM here in 590 The Fan, KFNS, 105.7 HD2, streaming live on InsideSTL.com. We're looking 8 years into the future at your St. Louis Blues. If you want to get involved in your predictions, it's 855-282-8255. It's time to predict because the excitement is coming. You know, by convention, you wait until after the Stanley Cup Final to announce your deals and to make your big moves and yada yada. And so now that time is here. And by the way, the Blues should be able to wrap up their assistant coaching search relatively soon because the Florida Panthers hired Bob Bugner over the weekend to be their head coach. Craig Berube was in the running for that job. Basically the last chair without a butt is going to be in Buffalo. So once, you know, but Buffalo, I think, was waiting for the end of the cup final to interview Phil Housley, who was an assistant with the Predators. So once that is done and Buffalo can get through their process, unless Craig Berube gets that job, I think it's fair to assume you're going to see him back here in St. Louis. I think, both Darren Dreger as well as Jeremy Rutherford were commenting over the weekend that it appears that that's where the music stops for Berube is back in St. Louis.
So. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, that's one of those things where I don't feel confident in making an assessment because realistically it's hard to know how a given assistant coach truly affects a team. When Berube was the head coach with the Flyers, their power play was very good. The Blues' power play has not been very good, and so one would hope that you can sort of jam those two things together and see a little progress, I guess,
yeah,
with the Blues.
And honestly, I mean, the power play should get better with Colton Parayko taking over as that guy.
One would hope.
There. Or even Alex Pietrangelo. He was getting a ton of points there at the end of the season when he was getting more playing time.
One would hope that someone took video of the Team Canada power play from the World Championships that involved Colton Parayko just launching bombs from the
strategy
point over
is,
and over.
Right. Strategy is easy. Get it to Parayko at the point. Let him blast it.
Well, the strategy is to create multiple points of attack on the power play. That is where the Blues fall down is that
everyone knows where they're going.
Everything has to go through Tarasenko. Sometimes he's on the wrong side of the ice, which creates a problem. And he doesn't have that quick trigger one-timer from the offhand dot like a guy like Ovechkin has. And so, yeah, you have basically one way to score.
Still scored several goals from that side, though.
Yes, you did. But that's the spot he needs to get in slightly more often. And you know,
I get your point.
Right. And if you watch a lot of side-by-side video of the two, the different, you know, you hear a lot on the broadcast about how great Tarasenko's release is, and it is good. Like, it is obviously, if you score goals the way he scores goals, your release is good. But he's not Alex. I mean, granted, this is a
sometimes
rough curve
there is a little
because
bit
no
of
one
a
is
hitch
no one is Alex though. Ovechkin. Yes, there is. There is definitely there's a little bit of a clutch
it's
and a little
not
bit of a hold.
As smooth as you would like.
It is not. It is not always super easy to get that puck off for him.
Now,
and
what
so,
is that? Is that something that could be chalked up to indecisiveness and like just a momentary little lapse there?
My guess is that it's probably mechanics. It's probably something to do with the way he loads his shot and what it takes for him to feel. A good comparison would be like a third baseman who always has to double clutch before they throw the ball to first, right?
Right.
I think Tarasenko probably needs that bit of clutch in his release before he lets it go. I had a text to my phone, by the way. My buddy Brad, who's called into the show a couple times, is texting it into my phone to ask what Steve Ott's role is going to be with this team. I think with Steve Ott, and he just texted the text in the box as well. I think with Steve Ott, what you're going to see, well, in terms of his actual role, he is taking Ray Bennett's spot as the eye in the sky. So he is the guy who has the sort of overarching view of the game, looking for the sort of developing trends on the ice, the way that the play grows organically in the way that that setups happen throughout the game. Realistically, I think Steve Ott's role is gonna be mascot. Like I honestly do believe that a large part of, and I don't know how this is even in dispute, but that a large part of the reason that Steve Ott was hired as an assistant coach is because they know how he fits in that locker room, and they were missing some of that.
Yeah,
you know, you've heard writers from the Cardinals, guys, you know, Derek Gould, I know, has talked about this in the past, say that when the Cardinals traded for AJ Pierzynski in 2014, and when they went out to get John Lackey, it was because they needed a rusty nail, right? They needed a guy in the room who would be a wee bit prickly, but in ways that generated energy around the team. Right. And I think
like Chris Carpenter did.
Yes, and I think it is fair to say that the Blues need that too, because again,
at the same time, though, Steve Ott is a smart guy, and they probably told him, get in there, get in the locker room, get up there, watch everything, listen to everything, right, learn what you can, because he has the potential to turn out to be a legitimate coach one of these days.
And Steve Ott is a guy who did, for a period of time, score a bucket of goals in the league. And Steve Ott has played damn near every role that you can see a forward play on a hockey team. He has been in that position. And so it's not like he doesn't have the necessary experience. And so I think that, you take a guy with that vision, and you take a guy with that sort of locker room presence, I think that has value. Now, maybe I'm wrong, and maybe 4 months into the season, it turns out that Steve Ott is a huge distraction, but I don't think that's likely to be the case.
I hope that's not the case.
Abe Froman texting in the traditional picture of old Steve the Pirate with a nice Steve Ott caption and saying that he's going to be in charge of the Pirate division. Yeah, it is shocking. You know, so that actor is Alan Tudyk. You do wonder, would we think that Steve Ott looks so much like that guy, if not for the role as Steve the Pirate? I mean, they do look a lot alike. Like, they are very similar-looking men. But you wonder if maybe if he had never played Steve the Pirate, if you would think that they looked alike.
I don't think so.
Would you? Yeah, you wouldn't.
I don't think so.
You wouldn't be able to put that together.
I'm trying to think of other movies I've seen him in.
He was in Knocked Up. He was the boss at E.
Okay, yeah, that doesn't count. I wouldn't use that to say he looks like Steve Ott.
I'm running quickly to IMDb because he's been a lot of stuff.
Yeah, something Dale and something, I think.
Tucker and Dale versus
Tucker and Dale versus Evil. He was in that movie, I believe.
Yes, he was.
Pretty funny.
That's
also
a good movie.
Not Steve Ottish in that. I don't think
he was the voice of K2SO in Rogue One. That doesn't really do
Get
a lot
out
for
of
you.
Here, really? Yeah,
He was K2's voice. The big droid, the one Cassian's buddy, big meaty one.
I get confused when they use numbers for names.
He was the big tall one, the co-pilot, the droid that hung out with Diego Luna. I don't want to give
Diego Luna
the guy in the movie.
I don't know who that is.
Did you not see Rogue One, man?
I did.
He was the guy in the movie. There was a lot of guys
in that movie.
Jin Erso, played by but he was the one who wasn't
Chinese.
None
of these names sound familiar.
He was the one that wasn't Chinese. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what I can
Jin
say.
Jin Erso,
the girl in the movie, main character in the movie.
Okay.
Okay, we got that. Do you remember her?
I do.
Okay, so she was flying around with her rebel buddy, the captain.
Sure.
No, I've already lost you.
Jeff.
All right. Well, all right.
Say so.
Fair. The point is,
I only watched it once.
Okay, it's good. You should watch it some more.
I will.
Okay, later. Fair enough. You were one character for that movie. I was like, if I can't hook you with he was the rebel captain's buddy, I have no other point.
Looking for Ewoks, and so I didn't really register anything else.
No Ewoks, unfortunately.
Yeah, disappointing.
Text from the 314. A lot of Nashville's success this postseason came from their D putting the puck on goal. Maybe the Blues can take a piece of that into next year. I've never seen a team's blue line so reluctant to shoot. So
yeah.
Okay, yes. Part of me thinks that this is confirmation bias, that as a Blues fan, we see so many Blues games that it's easy to grow frustrated with that. I think that if you watched other teams over the course of the season, you would see similar hesitation. I don't think that the lack of firing from all angles is endemic to the Blues. I think that it is more from a modern analytical perspective of what constitutes a quality scoring chance and of not wanting to waste possession by pounding a slap shot into somebody's shin pads. I do think, I think that there has been a conscious effort on the part of coaches around the league to reevaluate what constitutes a good possession. However, yes, I do think that there is value in in shooting the puck more, right? I mean, you know, when the puck is going towards the net, it is more likely to go in the net. And so, yes, there is obviously a huge benefit in the Blues maybe reevaluating whether or not they're making the right decisions with the puck all the time on the power play and contemplating a more frequent shooting posture, which is part of what we're talking about in terms of creating multiple looks on that power play. When you don't have to run everything through Tarasenko, when you have a legitimate option for a guy like Parayko to release bombs from the point and you tell him, go out there and shoot the puck, then you create more ways to score. The other thing that the Blues did not have at all this past season was that net front guy. I mean, the most consistent net front presence for the Blues on the power play this season was David Perron. I mean, Perron and Patrick Berglund to some extent. There was not that, you know, basically the Blues' top two power play units each lost the guy who did that job. Backes was on the first unit 2 years ago, Troy Brouwer on the second unit. And since both of those guys left, it meant the power play lost those guys who had those important roles. And so it's hard to change the way to change the way that you run that power play if you don't have the necessary personnel. And that's why you hear stuff like, maybe Ryan Reeves would be good on the power play. Even people are casting around desperately for a big body to stand in front of the net and bang home a rebound. And the Blues just don't have that.
Right, but here's the thing. So then why don't you just change up your strategy a little bit? Maybe come up with a power play plan, and I know other teams do it, that doesn't require that guy down low.
Well,
like that.
Because the Blues don't have enough skilled guys to do the
skilled guys.
They have neither big guys nor skilled guys, and so sometimes the puck just bounces in off of Patrick Berglund. I mean, I honestly don't know how, like, I don't
Patrick
know how
Berglund was okay with the tip-ins.
I don't know how they score power play goals that aren't Tarasenko power play goals. Right. And frankly, I don't think that...
How many power play goals were scored outside of Tarasenko?
I would have to look. I don't know.
Dozens?
If you subtracted Tarasenko and Shattenkirk from the team's power play goal total over the year, I'm guessing that I would suspect that they probably make up close to 30% of the team's power play goals throughout the year. That would be my
guess.
Sounds
probably fair. Close to fair.
I think they probably spent the whole year trying to figure out the answer to that question, trying to figure out how do we score power play goals otherwise. So Tarasenko, 9 power play goals. Kevin Shattenkirk, 7 power play goals. When you get past that, you have 6 for Petrangelo, 5 for Paul Stastny, and then a bunch of guys with 4. 4 for Parayko, 4 for Berglund, 4 for Robbie Fabry, and Robbie Fabry obviously didn't play hardly at all at the end of the season. So the Blues as a team, or I lost this column. Where are you? There you are. The Blues scored 50 power play goals in the regular season.
16 of which were Tarasenko and Shattenkirk.
Yes. So what did we say? 30%? That's
30.
32% is Tarasenko and Shattenkirk.
That was good.
We nailed that pretty well, And 18% of that, close to 20% of the team's power play goals were Vladimir Tarasenko. So, you subtract those two guys and an already somewhat anemic power play goes further down the tubes. And it,
But Petrangelo and Colton Parayko both should see a pretty decent uptick, I would think.
They should. And 6 shots, 6 power play goals from Petrangelo, by the way, does highlight the value of shooting the puck from the point. Matt, is the phone ringing? I got a text.
No, sir.
Okay, the phone does not appear to be ringing. If you're trying to call in, it is 855-282-8255.
Someone said they were trying to call in?
Yes, indeed. That's okay.
It might be muted again.
It might be a thing.
Hold on. I'll sit here and watch it for a while.
There's technological issues that occur every once in a while here. Yeah. You come in after the long weekend, and I will say, for the most part, it was non-destroyed in here this morning, aside from...
Well, that's because I was here.
Oh, you tidied before
I
arrived.
A little.
Well, I appreciate that. Because, as you just heard me, I made the assumption that it was non-destroyed.
I'm a tidied guy.
You are a tidied guy. I like to keep things straightened up
a little bit.
You were here, and Plowsy was here early, too, this morning. He's usually...
He's here before me?
He's sometimes here, but not usually in the station and rocking and rolling so early.
The phone's ringing.
The phone's ringing now.
But I saw it.
Well, there you go.
Watching it.
Phone's muted. That's what's going on. So Matt's grabbing the phone right now. As I remind you that in the second hour here of Game Time AM, we've gone deeper into the roster construction for your St. Louis Blues. Looking down the road at what it looks like, if you're interested in hearing what that conversation was about, you can go ahead and podcast. Going to be up on InsideSTL.com here shortly after the show. Also up on iTunes, on the Google Play Store, wherever you get your podcast, you'll be able to find your Game Time AM podcast. Matt's coming back over to the microphone. Who we got on the phone, Matthew?
I didn't ask, but he wants to talk about possible trades.
All right. Is it? I believe this is probably my buddy Bradley. Bradley, is that you, sir?
You know it, Jeffro.
What's up, buddy? How's it going?
Now, when we were kids, there were always blockbuster trades in the offseason. Always, always.
Yeah.
And then this past year, we had Shea Weber.
Right.
For Subban. Do we see any big trades happening this year? Because I've been reading a lot of rumor mill. Maybe Ovechkin, Claude Giroux. I mean, do you guys see that as a possibility?
I have a hard time.
Not for the Blues, but just them getting moved.
Right. Well, so I think that part of the reason you saw more of it, you know, 10, 15 years ago, was it with no salary cap, it's a lot easier to make those big deals.
Right.
Now, obviously, you have to make pretty close to a dollar-for-dollar swap for a lot of these teams. Ovechkin is a move that I have a hard time seeing because that's a lot of money. That's a core player on that team. And again, we talk about the way, you know, the business side bleeds over into the hockey side. That's the symbol of that franchise. And he's got a personal relationship with the owner. There's a lot of stuff with Ovechkin in Washington that they have tied up that it would be awfully hard to divorce that. A guy like Giroux, I mean, you don't know. The Flyers, I think, have been historically a team that have been not afraid to make those big deals, and they came down and they offered themselves. I think if a team had the right pieces that Philadelphia needed for a guy like Giroux, I could see him moving for sure because I think they probably have some concern about a little bit of a drop-off, I guess, with him. But at the same time, what are the right pieces? Because if you're the Flyers and you're replacing a guy like Giroux, not only are you going to have to take back probably some kind of bad contract, at least to balance the money a little bit, I don't know where you would get replacement for that offense. And so, but again, it is the giant moves are the ones that you hardly ever see coming. So, for example, last summer you talk about the Subban for Weber deal that occurred. There were two deals and a signing on the same day, and I'm blanking. Oh, the other deal was the Taylor Hall for Adam Larson trade. That was within an hour, as well as Steven Stamkos signing his extension with the Lightning. Those three things all happened within like 90 minutes of each other in one day last summer. Yeah, I mean, you know, some of those deals, those giant deals are the ones that you never see coming. Now, with Subban, there were always the whispers that they didn't like him in Montreal, and he had a no trade that was going to go into effect on July 1st, and so maybe they have to make the deal before then. So you could see how that would come together. So maybe, I don't know, maybe Ovechkin is the comparison there, right? Where you hear the whispers and you think, well, they're going to move him, but no, it's never going to happen. He's too good. He's too much part of the team. And maybe you would see it, but I don't know. I'd be awfully, awfully surprised.
Right. I mean, this offseason is going to be pretty wild, and I guess
yes,
it's going to start today with some trades coming out, with the Stanton draft.
Yeah, you're definitely going to see
July 1st is usually a Christmas day for me in my household.
I hear you. That's
moving to the TV.
There's,
oh, I can't wait.
There's three hockey holidays a year. There's the draft, there's the day, there's free agency day, and there's trade deadline day. The trade deadline day has sort of gone down a little bit in terms of excitement, just because, you know, teams have been making those deals now in the run-up to the day, but definitely draft day, definitely free agency day. You're right, this next week is going to be crazy. Next Sunday is the day that the protection sheets are due to the Golden Knights. And so in the next 6 days, you're going to see lots of player movement, lots of pick movement as teams try to, you know, take advantage of those roster spots, take advantage of those protection slots, and figure out what they really want going forward. And, you know, you hear there's rumors about teams willing to give the Knights a pick in exchange for, you know, the Blues are the team that to me make the most sense as a team that would be able to give up a high pick in exchange for a particular expansion draft selection. Those
now,
pieces
where
line
get
up.
Another draft pick from this year for the first round.
That's from Washington. We have Washington's first round pick from the Shattenkirk trade.
That's what I thought. Okay.
So we have the Blues have their own first round pick, which is number 20, and the Washington first round pick, which is number 27. And so if you have that extra first round pick, you obviously don't want to burn an asset that valuable just to dump a contract, unless you have another guy in mind. If you have some kind of strategy, whether it's a trade or a free agency signing, I don't even know who that would be, but if you have something in mind that you are confident that you can execute, then maybe burning that pick would be worth it. I don't know. The other, for the Blues, at least in terms of the expansion draft, the other really interesting thing that I see is that they realistically only have six of their seven protection slots for forwards that are super locked in. So you're talking Tarasenko, Schwartz, Steen, Stastny, Sobotka, Berglund. Those are the six guys that you're certainly protecting. That number seven, you know, you hear David Perron, you hear even Ryan Reeves from some guys, which I know Matt hates. Matt's making a terrible face right now. But that seventh spot is not necessarily one that, you know, there aren't seven guys who you're dying to keep if you're the Blues, right? There's four, five guys who you're really dying to keep and two guys who you want to keep. So maybe there's an opportunity for the Blues to trade for a forward in the next week and use a spot on a guy like that, right? You know, again, this is just, this is spitballing a name. A guy like Jacob Silverberg, who, you know, playing for Anaheim. Silverberg, you know, Anaheim's got a very limited number of spots available because they have so many guys with no move clauses. Maybe that's a guy who becomes available over the next week that you can sort of swoop in on at a lower price. So there are so many moving parts with rosters in the NHL over the next week that it will definitely be really exciting to watch.
Hey, Matt, what do you think about that? He won't even let you get a word in.
I know. I'm yapping this morning.
Hey, he's running with it.
Matt's researching over there. He's looking up stats and stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking up Jason Silverberg's stats. I'm really curious. My worry, honestly, is that Doug Armstrong, and he kind of overvalues certain guys. So I don't know that he necessarily sees as big a need as some of us may see.
There's a lot of loyalty.
You know, exactly. Loyalty, overvalued, whatever you want to call it. And that's with guys like Berglund or Perron or even at this point Steen. These guys aren't necessarily as valuable as maybe Doug Armstrong values them. So maybe he's not in too big of a hurry to go out and add somebody because he thinks that we have enough, that they have enough.
That's totally fair.
Last thing.
Yeah, what's up?
Are we excited to see the dismantle of the Blackhawks maybe this offseason?
I'm pretty excited. I got excited over the weekend when it started to sort of when the smoke started to leak out that they're gonna have to do something. They're $4.5 million over the cap. They got to sign probably a backup goalie, probably another forward. They got guys they have to re-sign. Yeah, I think that you can safely assume. Somebody who has multiple cup rings in Chicago is leaving. So aside from Kruger, who we could just assume is gone, you know, the Kruger to Vegas.
I got on their Facebook page, Blackhawk fan, diehard fan since, well, we all know, 2010.
Yeah.
And they're all calling for Seabrook's head. It's great. That's, I'm like, I love it.
That's the guy they want. That's the guy they want moved out. But
you know what, though? I would still have more confidence in them turning into another cup-winning team before the Blues.
Well, yeah, because when you win three, you know how to get back.
They can go through this, and they're going to do what they need to do to become a winner again, and they're going to come back and win the Stanley Cup again, and the Blues are still going to be sitting there with Patrick Berglund.
And you didn't even tell anybody that you're wearing a red shirt this morning, Matt.
I didn't see the relevance.
I'm saying all this Blackhawks pride in the red. I don't know, man.
Whoa, don't even.
No, I don't know, man.
Don't even.
Oh.
All right. Yeah. All right.
Let's call him the Hawk.
There you go.
See you guys.
All right. Thanks, Bradley, for calling in, buddy. Yep. Yeah. So, yes, it is. Woo. As we wrap up the second hour here. Yes, it is holiday time in the NHL for sure. It is going to be a busy, busy, busy week. I think yes, probably as soon as today, you're going to see some things start to filter in that have been, you know, probably Vegas has had some deals arranged for a good couple of weeks now. And now that you're, you know, I don't know, polite moratorium or whatever is done.
How much does
time.
Marcus Kruger make?
$3 million.
How did he ever get that much?
They won three cups and they had a party and they passed out dollars to everybody who was there. Look,
whoops.
There were some reward deals. There are plenty of Blackhawks fans.
They'd be willing to give up Trevor Van Riemsdyk just to clear up $3 million.
They're going to have to. Well, you know, again, TVR is a guy who probably caps out as a reliable second pairing defenseman. Kruger is a guy who is still a useful bottom six forward. And so it's the same thing with.
Right,
you had the Bickle-Teravainen deal with Carolina last summer, where Bickle is never going to be more than a fourth line player, but Teravainen might be, you know, a scoring forward. So yeah, you trade basically. In this case with the Blackhawks, you're giving up a slightly lower ceiling prospect in order to also get rid of a slightly better player. But it's the same sort of concept. Text from the 618 says odds the Blues acquire a wing to move him to move him or an existing wing to center, roughly 115%.
Is that a joke?
It is. I think the Blues do not seem to put a lot of value on natural centers, right? They turned, you know, if we go way back, they turned Keith Tkachuk into a center, and then they turned David Backes into a center. I mean, hell, if we go further back than that, they turned Pavel Dimitra into a center in the early 2000s. And
that one worked out pretty well.
That one worked out fine. And then Backes at center also worked out okay. But I think at this point, they have sort of the opposite problem where they have so many mediocre guys that can play center that they have to push some of them off to the wings.
Right. Or keep them down in the minors. Barbershop.
Okay, so here is I guess the question that I would love to know before we get out of here, your answer to Matt Davis.
Okie dokie.
What do you think is the percentage chance that the St. Louis Blues acquire in this offseason a player who scores more than 50 points next season for the Blues?
Zero.
Zero?
0% chance.
Okay, well.
I think if anybody gets added to this team, it's going to be small bit players. Nobody of any significance.
I would.
Because, like I just said a minute ago, I think Doug Armstrong. I almost said Doug Vaughn because I was looking
Doug,
at him.
Doug, yeah.
Doug Armstrong.
Doug Vaughn can't
guys.
Run this hockey team.
Right. Yeah. I think multiple players on this Blues roster are overvalued, and because of that, I don't think there will be much of a stretch to add a guy that's going to bring any significant offensive firepower or anything else to that, for
yeah,
that matter.
I wouldn't say zero, but I would put the number at 20.
Okay, I'll put
like,
it
like,
at
like
20%.
Like 20% is where
2%, it's not zero, but it's still pretty much zero.
I agree.
I don't see it happening because, I mean, first of all, they don't have the cap to do that, which means they're going to have to, you know, finagle some cap room out of something somehow.
Yep.
You know, whether that's getting rid of Laterra or anybody else, I don't know. But they're going to have to make up some cap room for sure. And I just don't see the creativity being there from the deciding people in the office. So
I mean, 50 points would have made a player the fourth leading scorer.
One thing we've heard, and I don't know that we've heard this word necessarily, but it's basically the same thing, and we've heard from these guys, is more or less content. There's a whole lot of contentment, I think, with the Blues.
Yeah.
Way too much for my comfort.
Yep, that's fair. All right, well, there's your downer to end the show. 3 stars, Matt Davis. Who do we got here at the end of the show? Who do you got for a 3rd star?
I'm going to go ahead and go with 8 years from now, Tage Thompson.
8 years from now, Tage Thompson, 3rd star of today's show. For the 2nd star of today's show, I'm going to go with George McPhee, the GM of the Vegas Golden Knights, just for getting us ramped up and ready to go. And the number 1 star of today's show, I'm going to give it to Stubby Applause because he has 2 texts, one coming in here at the wire. Doug Vaughn could run the Blues, personnel guy, leader of men. Hard to argue with that, so Stubby Applause firing off the text inbox this morning. This has been Game Time AM here in 590 The Fan, KFNS, 105.7 HD2, and InsideSTL.com. Before we take off, I very briefly wanted to send out a small note of condolence and concern to some folks in my family dealing with a loss over the weekend. So think about my Uncle Dean, his brother Bill, Bill's wife Chris. We love you guys, and we're thinking about you. So if you want to go back and listen to the show this morning, podcast it, InsideSTL.com, iTunes, anywhere you get podcasts. Come on back tomorrow morning. Hopefully we got a million roster moves to talk about, and if not, we've still got plenty of Cardinal stuff. Didn't have time to get into this morning because there's hockey, Matt. There's hockey to talk about.
Yeah.
So we'll have hockey all week here on Game Time AM on 590 The Fan.